Just a black plastic game watch. Did you want to speak to the crowd?
I'm going.
There's one in the museum. The one in the museum, you can probably all see the two yellow buttons there. The one in the museum has black buttons. The first ones out of the factory all had yellow buttons, but then GCE decided that those looked a little chintzy. They looked kind of like toys, and they would look more high-tech if they had black buttons, so they changed the color of the buttons. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Here are some of the pictures of what the game watches looked like in their packaging. And these, one thing that we did differently from the competition, and at that time the competition was pretty much the timeout by Nintendo. This one is called Exterminator. They also had Fireman. And they were our big competition. They were the role models that we were shooting for, that we were trying to emulate and do better than. And as you can see on the display there, each of these devices is capable of playing multiple games. That was the main differentiation point that we had, was that for one thing, our game watches could be worn on the wrist, and for another thing, their displays were capable of multiple different games because they weren't dedicated displays. The Exterminator game is basically what we now call whack-a-mole. And you can see little mounds of dirt moving up, and there's your guy with his hammers, and then a mole head appears, and if you're in the right spot, you whack him, and the mole's gone. Well, there's nothing you can play with this except variants on whack-a-mole. But we took a different approach with our things. So this is the three watches. Game Time was the first one. It came out in 1981. And shortly after that, in 82, Arcade Time and Sports Time were released. I'm going to tell you the story about how these came about. Game Time, well, that was exciting. You can, those of you sitting in that spot, you can see the screen better now. So the Game Time display was sort of, it was handed to me, and it was sort of like, here it is, and go make games for this. But the other two watches were different. They were given to us as, design us something else, and you get to design what the display is going to be. I'm going to tell you more about that. We also did two calculators, Space Encounter and Chase Encounter. And I'll show you a little bit of Space Encounter. I got some screenshots and some drawings and stuff, and plenty of stories, mostly about Game Time, the first watch, and the Space Encounter calculator. The year was 1981. I was working at Western Technologies, which many of you know was the company that created the Vectrex game system. I was a model maker. I was working in the model shop making plastic housings to put electronics in because Western Technologies was primarily an inventor or developer of original electronic toy concepts. And so my job was to make stuff that you put electronics into, and you had to be able to screw them together, and they had to look like the final product. Because a big part of inventing a device is making a prototype of the device, then you can show to prospective manufacturers for them to decide whether or not they'd like to take it and manufacture and distribute it. One day I was sitting at my model bench working away on some model, I don't remember what it was, when Jerry Carr came in to see me. It was just about lunchtime, and he was moaning. He was like, I don't know what to do. They told me I got to make this game watch. I'm supposed to program these games, and it's just circles and dots. I mean, I don't know where to start with that. So I says, oh, you need games. I got games. Let's go to lunch. So we went to lunch. And when we came back, we had a long list of game ideas. We showed them to Gary Niles, who was the vice president of Western Technologies. And he went through and he picked and chose the ones that he liked. And then he told me to go write them up. And just like that, I was a game designer. Well, we all know what cut and paste is. There's, you click the little scissors icon first, then you click the, or maybe you hit Control V to paste. Well, back then I used to do it with scissors and scotch tape. I started off by handwriting the game ideas. I would write my edits in the margins. I'd write sideways, and sometimes it'd go around to the top of the page, and I'd be writing up there, and then I'd give those to Lucy Warner, who was J. Smith's secretary, and she'd try and type them up, and she would look at it and she'd go, "Where's this thing go? And what's?" She said, "Can you do me a favor?" She gave me some scissors and scotch tape, and she said, "Put it all together so I can like just go down it linear." So that's what I did. I put them together, and then she typed them up, and the writings got disseminated around to the office to where they needed to be. And of course, we found out that my writing sucked pretty bad. So J. Smith had a sample game design, and it was a sample game design for something like this, one of these toys, and I think it must have come from Hong Kong. It taught me a new way of writing, and especially new kinds of words that I'd never heard before, like decrement and increment. And you precede a bullet point list with the term as follows. So the game acts in this manner, colon, and then bullet, 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 and then you make your list of things, or maybe it would be a numbered list. I also had to make some drawing shortcuts. And I found that it was tough. This is the display here shows you an outline form, sort of like if it was a coloring book, illustrating the design of all the LCD elements on the face of the game watch. So I could fill these in. Now it's real easy to do. I just go in with my little bucket icon in MS Paint and I just fill them in. But then I had to do it with magic marker or felt tip pen. But this was a handy way to do it. I made this outline drawing, and then I would just copy it on the photocopier, and then I could fill in the shapes and illustrate how the game works, frame by frame, or sort of some of the steps. And then I pasted the pictures onto the typed document with scotch tape, ran them through the photocopier, and then I had my finished pages. So out of that list of game ideas for the Game Time watch, the ideas that were picked, some of the names of these games were chosen by GCE's marketing people. Missile Strike was a little anti-aircraft shooting game that was inspired by Missile Command. Let's go back to this picture here. Down at the bottom left corner, there would be a U-shape. Down at the bottom right corner, there'd be a little U-shape because the circle didn't have to, the circle is in two segments. I have to explain a little bit about LCDs. There's a dot in the center of the circle, and there's the top half of the circle and the bottom half of the circle. And the dot would be cut off from all the electronic leads if the circle wasn't open somewhere. So we had the circle open at both sides so that you could get a lead into the dot, and then the lead could go on out the other side. And this meant that the top and bottom halves of the circle were independently turnable on and off, switchable. But I'm missing the right word for that. Okay. So anyway, we put a little U at the bottom right corner, the bottom left corner, and from those are your anti-aircraft guns. You can shoot up diagonally from either of those, and a circle would fly overhead, and you'd have to time it so that when your missile got up, it would hit it. It looked a little bit like Missile Command, but much more rudimentary. Then we also had Alien Assault, which was you could move back and forth, left and right, and shoot up at the circles that were coming down. Of course, this was inspired by Space Invaders. We also had Blast Away, where we would use an upper half of a circle segment to bounce a dot that was moving around, and it was knocking out circles at the top of the display. This one, of course, was inspired by Breakout. The final game, though, was my own brilliant idea, and that was Firing Squad. Actually, it might have been inspired by Jerry saying Firing Squad when I was describing something else, and then I said, okay, Firing Squad is great. We can do that real easy. And the way that Firing Squad works is we have a column of circles at the left, and you are the circle at the right, and you can move the circle up or down by pressing either of the two buttons. This button moves you up, this one moves you down, and your job is to dodge the bullets. The firing squad is firing, some of them are firing blanks and some of them are firing bullets. that's the way real firing squads work. None of the members of the squad know for sure whether it was their bullet that killed the guy or not. Well, the way the firing squad game works is first one of the guys doesn't have a blank, he has a real bullet. Then two of them have bullets instead of blanks. Then three of them have bullets instead of blanks. Until there are five of them. It's a 6x6 matrix, so there was always at least a gap of one that you could step into to dodge the bullets. And after they had all fired volleys, then they would fire at will and you had to dodge those bullets. And you see here, I've colored in some of the circles with gray to indicate that that's like the spot behind where the bullet just was and it's moving this way. So that's the way I did it on the design document. I used black to represent current location and gray to indicate past location of elements of the LCD. And I would paste those into the design document. Yeah. I was just wondering that myself. As I've been looking at it, I've been thinking, gee, I should have. Okay, I'm going to click on this thing and this ought to animate. If there's any God, this is going to animate. Okay. Right-clicking, huh? Meeting minder. Speaker notes. Let's try this. Let's refresh that. You were asking your question just as we got to this. You know what? I think the computer is still thinking about playing that video. It's just a 5-second MPEG. It ought to... I think the computer doesn't like Las Vegas much. Okay. What's supposed to happen is when you come into the frame, it's supposed to run. It's not running. Okay, so imagine that there's a dot moving from the left over to the right, and then you see a big hammy finger come into the thing and press the button on the right, and the circle moves up. There were there are unexpected aspects of being a public speaker, and there are also unexpected aspects of being a game designer, at least for me, because it was my first time. I'd never heard of the job of game designer. And in fact, at this time, in 1981, I think most people who were game designers were also programming their own games. We were doing things a little bit differently at Western, so it was perhaps a little unusual that I, a non-programmer, was being paid to design games. But I learned quickly enough that my writing usually left question marks for Jerry Carr. He would be working away on his program, then he'd suddenly have a question and he needed me. So he'd need me to sit there with him while he was programming so that he fully understood what it was that I was looking for. At times I even had to serve as his alarm clock and chauffeur because he tended to kind of come in when it occurred to him that he ought to come in. So sometimes the boss would come to me and say, "Where's your Jerry?" And I'd, what do you mean, my Jerry? He'd say, "Go get your Jerry." So so I'd have to go and get my Jerry. This sort of thing took me away from the model shop, and my boss, Walter Nakano, didn't appreciate that very much. But eventually we got that project done, and the game was made. And my next project after that was to design not only the games for Arcade Time, which is this watch that doesn't have a band on it because it broke off, and I'll show you a picture of it in a minute, and the picture might not animate. We'll find out when we get to it. Not only the games, but also the LCD had to be designed for that. I'm not going to tell you a whole lot about the Arcade Time because I'm mainly here to talk about the Game Time and the Space Encounter today. But the assignment was to create another display that was capable of multiple games. And like I said before, this way we were being completely unlike the displays in the Nintendo's timeout line. And one of the things that I had to do, because nobody wanted to spend the money to actually make an LCD and then spend the money and time that it took to program it without being sure that this display was actually going to be useful for displaying multiple games, was I had to make a proof of concept. I'm not a programmer. The computers back then didn't have little spaceship displays that you could just pull up and just say, "Here, just show me a spaceship and thing, guns shooting up at it and flying saucers and stuff." So I had to make hand-drawn paper animations on animation paper with holes in it and a little animation board and a video camera pointed at it and did stop frame animation, and a videotape to show what the game was going to look like. And mainly the client, of course, was Ed Krakauer at GCE, and when he looked at those, he thought, I guess that's going to work. Okay. So they had to, then they could make an LCD. Is this going to animate now or what? It doesn't look like it. It's all Sony's fault. They made the computer. And they also made the camera. Okay, so it's either Sony's fault or Microsoft's fault. I don't know which. If we click on it, it's supposed to run. I don't think it's going to do that. I'm going to just tell you what we're looking at here. I'm going to wave my arms a lot, and you can imagine. So you see at the bottom of the display, we have all this row of guns. And up in the middle part of the game area, we have a flying saucer. And you see a little shape over on the right there that looks kind of like an X. Well, those segments double up. They are both fins for a rocket ship. You take a flying saucer, and you put two of those things on it, and that becomes fins on a rocket ship. Or it's rays that the flying saucers and the rockets can shoot at each other, and they're also sort of beams of light that come together and you materialize out of them. You see it now, right? Yeah, I know. I should have brought the videotape of the paper animation. That would have made it clearer. So that game got implemented. The first thing that had to happen was we had to make a prototype of the glass, the crystal, the liquid crystal display. Then we had to build a unit. And then somebody at Western Technologies had to program a prototype of it. Then we could take that program and send that to Japan where the chips were being made. And then they could program the actual game. They would use the prototype program as a source code that they could use as a starting point. Anyway, having designed those first two games, the Game Time games and the Arcade Time LCD and games, they decided that maybe I could keep on doing more game design, so they gave me another assignment. They wanted a calculator, and they wanted, again, a multi-game display. So this is what I came up with. I'm really big on sci-fi and spaceships, so the theme works, so I stuck with it. And here we see three different shapes. At the top, of course, we have the digits because it's a calculator. It's going to have to tell the time, and it's also going to have to be used to do addition, multiplication, subtraction, and all that stuff. And below that, we see arrow shapes. Those are spaceships, very sleek little asteroids-like spaceships. And behind those, we see a square that's turned on its corner. Those represented either asteroids or pieces of landscape. And the dots could be used as bullets and also as pieces of the landscape. I was still writing my designs by hand and having Lucy type them, but she had gotten tired of doing all this, so it was finally suggested to me that I learn how to use a word processor. This was 20 years ago. Look at me now. Am I doing great with this thing or what? If it wasn't for Sony and Microsoft, I'd be... Anyway, so they wouldn't give me a computer of my own. I had to timeshare somebody else's CPM computer. It had an S100 bus, but I don't remember the name or brand of the computer. It must have had one. It was this big black thing and it had these orange levers on the front and keyboard and, like, you know, a green and black monitor. And I was time-sharing those. But finally, one magic day, Jay bought Osborne 1s for all the designers. There were actually a couple of other designers besides me. The Osborne 1 is this magic little box you see here. It has two floppy disk drives, a keyboard that folds out into the front. The whole thing fits under your airplane seat. And that tiny little monitor right in the middle there, that built-in monitor was shorter than a line of text. So whenever you were typing your game designs, you'd be doing fine until you got to the edge of the screen, then the whole screen would shift over. And then you'd be typing the next half. And then as soon as you hit enter or you got to the end of the line, it would shift back again. So you're sitting there and it's shifting back and forth all the time, but you're just typing away like crazy. And anyway, I thought I was in heaven because suddenly I knew how to use computers, and the writing was much easier this way, and I learned how to cut and paste electronic style. It was great. Again, I did the same drawing shortcuts that I'd done on the game time. I made an outline of the LCD display. I ran off copies on the photocopier. I'd fill in the shapes to illustrate how a game would look, and then I'd paste those pictures in with Scotch tape and run them off on the photocopier. Well, another unexpected aspect of being a game designer was I got to go to Japan. On the game watches, Jerry Carr had always been the one who'd gone to Japan, but now for the Space Encounter calculator, Jerry was tied up on something else. I think it was probably the executive for the Vectrex. And the game was going to be the final game was going to be programmed at Toshiba in Kawasaki, Japan, a suburb of Tokyo. And because Jerry was tied up, I got sent. All in all, I went to Japan 3 times, and the experience was absolutely incredible, but I don't have time to talk about all that, so I'm not going to. But you can ask me about that stuff anytime. So Jerry had programmed the prototype of the Space Encounter, or maybe another programmer named Louis Teig had programmed that. I don't remember for certain. But now that I was in Toshiba, the programmer who was going to be doing the final program was named Nishikawa-san. I think his first name was Akihito, but I'm not positive on that. I've been checking with my friends who speak Japanese better than I do. He told me that his name meant West River Philosopher. Nishikawa means West River. So his first name meant philosopher, but if depending on how they write it. But anyway, I'm going to try and make this a long story short, so I'm cutting it off. Anyway, the philosopher had a little problem with my phaser fight game, which of course was inspired by Scramble. And the problem was that the landscape was too big. The whole game and the clock and the calculator functions all had to fit into 5.3K, or maybe it was 3.5K. I might have gotten dyslexic on this one, I don't remember. I had defined the landscape frame by frame in the design document, thinking that that was how a programmer would want to see it. So it looked like this. You see there's a mountain down there on the bottom of the display, and as you move from frame 1 to frame 2 to frame 3 to frame 4, you see the mountain is shifting one frame at a time towards the left. He thought I intended for him to program it this way so that here's a frame and here's defining all of these pixels as on and off and then doing it again for each frame in succession. And he said, you know, that's going to take up way too much space. So I said, well, can you do like make it one long landscape and then move a window along it instead? Oh yeah, we can do that. That'll probably fix the problem. So I had to ask for scissors. I found out that the word for that is hasami. And I had to ask for scotch tape. I found out that the term for that in Japanese is scotchi tape. And I cut up, we photocopied the game design, and I cut up all of my little frames, and I just pasted them together, and it made this thing that was about as long as this table, and then I just sort of folded it over on itself until it could fit in my hands, and with two hands, I held it to him out this way, and he took it with two hands, and we had to do a bow. It was a very formal Japanese kind of ceremony, and it seemed to like set the tone for the next portion, which was the philosopher's ordeal. Nishikawa-san conferred with his boss, and they asked me, could I come back in 3 days? It was going to take him 3 days to program the calculator. Well, I was there on somebody else's dime on expense account, and to fly back to the United States, then I'd have to turn around and fly back to Japan again. So it was a tough job, but I had to do it. So I went sightseeing for 3 days. And when I came back, I found out about the tools that the philosopher had been using in programming the calculator. This is my artist's conception of what the machine looked like. I don't remember precisely, but this is the way I remember it. It was about the size of today's mini tower computers. There was no keyboard. There was no monitor. You see the LCD display with the digits, and you see the little keypad. That was it. He had to type in the program in machine code. So he was typing 0A189B2C and whatever. I just made all that up. So if anybody that knows machine language is sitting there going, you just insulted me, well, I'm sorry. So here's Nishikawa-san. He went to light a cigarette. His hands were shaking because he hadn't slept those 3 days that I'd been sightseeing and sleeping. He had written out the program on paper, longhand, and he'd done his proofing on the paper. And when he thought that it looked like it was probably right, he punched in the numbers on the front of the unit from beginning to end. If he found a bug, he had to start all over again from the beginning. It's no wonder his hands were shaking. So now I had a new assignment. Here's the game, play it. Is it good? They were just sitting there staring at me while I played the games. I had to play all the games. I tried doing a couple of little multiplications. The phaser fight game could be played through from beginning to end because it was a landscape that had a starting point and an ending point. And I decided if I could just get to the end point of it, that'll probably have to satisfy me. And I looked at this guy with his shaking hands and I just knew there was no way I could find any bugs, so I didn't. I declared it good and I learned the meaning of the word bonsai. Bonsai, of course, is a Japanese word we've all heard before, and I found out that it means in English, hooray! This is supposed to animate. If I kick that thing, I'm not gonna kick any of these things, I guess. If I click on it, will it do it? Yeah, okay, I'll click the button here, yeah. this thing on the left here, this is a joystick. If I push it up and to the right, that'll start game number one. Push it down to the right, that'll start game number two. Yeah, oh well. Oh, that looks like that's the end of the slideshow. So, what was I gonna say? So there's the Space Encounter calculator. This is my beat up one. That's my beat up one that I've been having in my desk at work for like 20 years. I've been using it as a calculator. And I found that, So let's do it this way. I started off the wrong way. Okay, so here's my calculator. People would come into my office and they'd wonder like, you know, so that budget there that you just did for this PlayStation game, what does that come out to? And I'd go, oh, well, let's see here, 45,000 plus, you know, and I'd go, oh, hell with it. I don't like, I feel like playing a game instead. And I'd push it over to there. And they'd all go, what the hell is that? So if you were playing a game, you know, and teacher came along and wanted to know what the hell you were doing, you could just slide this back over here and you just, oh, I'm just doing my homework, teacher. 1982, 20 years ago, this year. And the next calculator that we did after that was the Chase Encounter. See, it's a calculator. See, it's a game system. See, it even like beeps and everything. Go ahead, beep. Come on. Oh, I gotta press. There we go. Can you hear it? You're not supposed to be able to hear it if you don't want people to hear it. There's a silent mode in here somewhere. The instructions tell you how to turn the sound off. But this one was one of those odd things that I didn't design the display on this one. It's just vertical lines and horizontal lines, and they double as digits for the timekeeping and the calculator. And they also keep score and you play a game with them. So I think this one's a bit more of a stretch to figure out from what the other ones are, but it's what it is. So there's a question back there. In sports time, I was involved with sports time. I might have helped design the LCD display for that one. Patrick King was the designer. Richard Muskowski was the programmer who did the prototype on that one. There was a question over here. Any other questions? Ask me more stories or anything. Yes? CPU speed. B28C. I have no idea. Non-technical questions, please. I learned how to read Japanese when I was... Actually, I didn't learn how to read all Japanese. I was learning how to how my name was written. Tom Sloper in Japanese. Everything is phonetic in Japanese. So it's Tomu Suro-o-pa-a. They don't have R's, so everything... Well, they have R's, but they sound kind of like Spanish R's. And I learned that if I'm walking down a street and I see that character there, that's Toe because it's in my name. And then I learned also how to read the characters for hotel, because I was staying at one, and beer, because I like drinking that, and coffee, because I learned like to drink that in the morning. So after a while, I knew the characters for Toe and Mu and Su and Ro and Pa and Bi and Ru and Ho and Te, and bingo, it's like I've got half the alphabet practically. I would go and I'd see a sign with katakana on it, and I'd sit there and I'd be working away trying to figure out what it said. Then I'd notice that after I figured it out, I'd notice that right underneath it, it said it in English anyway. That happened to me in the hotel too. I was in the hotel. My girlfriend went with me on one of my trips to Japan. I went three times. And we were in the hotel coming out and she says, "Okay, Mr. Hotshot, what does it say on that door right there?" And I'm looking at it and I'm going, "Su, pu, ri, n." She's going, "What, superintendent?" I said, "Well, let me try it again. I got to say it faster till I get it." I had to hear myself say it before I could understand what it saw. Supuri, n, and then it's like, ku, and then I'm like, da. And she said, "Well, say it faster." I said, "Supuri, n, ku, da." She said, "Sprinkler." It was the sprinkler system for the hotel. So I did learn how to, on that door it wasn't written in English because there was no reason to. Anyway, if there's a question.
What do you think of the Game Boy and having to kind of took that idea later on?
Well, what Nintendo did next after that was they came out with the Game and Watch series, which I just loved. I have a huge collection of those, and when I was in Japan, I bought up also a lot of Japanese handheld LCD games, not made by Nintendo. I have several Bandai ones, and one of them is the Chikatetsu game, Subway. You are a Subway station attendant, and your job is to push the people into the cars at rush hour. The name of the game was Rush Hour, and it was written out in English, and that's your job, is to get the people in so that the train can leave on time. So I collected several of those. There was one that was called Tentochito or something, Heaven and Earth or something, Heaven and something, or Heaven and Hell or something. It wasn't Chito, Heaven and Hell. And now there's a movie with a similar kind of a name, but I collected a bunch of those. The Game & Watch series, the Donkey Kong, the double display ones that they made, those were all brilliant, but they stopped making all those when they came out with the Game Boy. I do have a story to tell about Game Boy. Several years after this, 7 years after my first trips to Japan, 1989, I was working at Activision. I got another 5 minutes, and I'm going to keep on talking till 5 minutes. You can go. You can go, Steve. Okay, well, I'm going to spill some water on you. All right.
See you next year.
All right. I was working at Activision, and Activision, I went with Chris Garsky and Jeff Mulligan and Paul Kohler and Bruce Davis, and all of us went over to visit Nintendo's headquarters in Kyoto. And we were talking to them about manufacturing schedules for NES cartridges that I was producing. We wanted to know when could we get these things made and all that stuff. It was about all timing. Everything's got to be out for Christmas. And they go, and Jeff Mulligan says to the guy from Nintendo, "Say, we hear that you have this new handheld toy called the Game Boy. Where you want? We want to see it." So they bring in one of two working prototypes of the Game Boy. At least that's the way we understood what they said, that they only had two. Maybe they only had two in that building. And everybody's looking at it and they go, "Well, I don't know what to do with this. You know, they're suits. You know, what do they know about playing games?" So they look at me and they go, "Tom, here, you play this." So they gave me the Game Boy, and it had the earplugs on it. So I put the earplugs in my ears and I turned on the game, and it was Mario, the first Mario game on the Game Boy. and I'm going along, and I'm running, and I'm jumping, and I'm going over things, and things are coming along and hitting me, and I'm hearing the music, I'm bopping my head, and then I jump down into a thing, and there's all these coins, and I'm just going, whoa, whoa, and I looked up, and everybody was staring at me. I have no idea how long I was doing that. I took the earplugs out, and they said, so Tom, do you like it? I had no words. I was speechless. I mean, I was in love. This thing was awesome. Just putting the earplugs in, I was in there. I was Mario. I was totally hooked. I mean, as soon as they came out, I had to have it. So, I mean, I just love Game Boy. I always have. And it's the god of the handhelds, and long may it reign. Any other questions? We have 2 more minutes. And I'm going to make you all sit here. No, I'm not. Okay, everybody dismissed. Thank you very much for listening. And you can see the calculators if you want to come up.